Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 11th of May, recording at 8:39 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, first the highlights. Global stock markets, certainly some loss of form following a very persistent rally, which began in the second week of March and carried up for the most part until into last week. Now, that said, we had some interesting developments here today following the weakness on Wall Street last night. We have seen Asia, for instance, pretty well all on the downside, but Asian indices where they sold off, closing well off the lows in many instances. China, of course, has been a law unto itself, but my goodness, it looks overextended. European markets had good rebounds in here today, not offsetting yesterday's declines, but more importantly, perhaps, no downside follow-through. Ditto Wall Street, which is up about 100 on the Dow as I speak, and up 1278 on the S&P as I speak. Again, not offsetting all of yesterday's declines, but more importantly, not getting the follow-through on the downside. And government bonds, quiet. They gave up some gains that we had seen this morning, and that's not surprising given the rallies that are taking place. The JGBs had rallied sharply. It'd be interesting to see what they do on Monday. And the gilts are up again here today, up slightly, but the treasuries have slipped a little bit given Wall Street's rally. Not surprising, as I said. The US dollar is easier in here today, but still above 82 on the US dollar index, and the euro has picked up 44 ticks to 135.29. And the Australian dollar is quite firm here at 83.15. In terms of metals, now they were pretty well all down yesterday. We've got a bounce in here today, I think pretty well across the boards. Nickel, which has been such a tower of strength, is $500 to the plus side of that psychological $50,000 dollar level. We have gold up 570 as I speak, and silver up 17 right now, not offsetting yesterday's declines. It would take two or three more days of this type of action, three more days really of this type of action to offset yesterday's declines. But if you're looking for other than a clear bullish sign for the sector, that's got to be platinum. Platinum is closed up 17.5 in here today, and Owen's posted that chart. It looks by far the best of the precious metals technically right now, and as I've said so often in the past, platinum tends to be a leader. And soft commodities, we've seen a bounce in the grain and bean complex. Corn up 14.75, and my goodness, it needed it. And gasoline up again here today, 235 on the spot contract. Crude oil up 63 cents, 62.44. The white sugar, that's the London contract, has had a very good rally recently, albeit off a low. And that was up $7 in here today. And anything else to mention? I think that's pretty much it in terms of the highlights. But precious metals had weakened for most of the week before today's firmer tone. Industrial metals basically ranging overall, and the grains had been soft prior to today's upward moves. Okay, So what's going on here, and what can we say, both on a short to medium and then also a longer term? Well, as far as stock markets are concerned, I think that we're in an environment where we are quite likely to see a ranging reaction. One of the bigger, somewhat bigger reactions, certainly bigger than we've seen since the second week of March, which has been a pretty persistent upward trend. And I've emphasized over and over in these broadcasts, but I know not everybody hears all of the audios. I've emphasized that I did not expect a reaction to be another reaction to be a meltdown, such as we saw at the end of February and the beginning of March. And I thought it would be much more of a ranging mean reversion type move. And if we're getting a reaction, and I maintain that a reasonable amount of technical evidence suggests that we are, it does look like it will be primarily of that ranging variety overall. Now, if we don't get that reaction and markets go surging on into new high ground following this brief pause, I think that would set up a potentially dangerous situation. One important market has done that. Several markets have done that. Peru, perhaps most of all, but that's not going to get people quaking internationally. China could, and China, and this is just a blistering advance, rising by over a third, and doing that in 8 weeks of consecutive, obviously very strong gains. It looks way overstretched, and today's move by the B share index looks climactic. The Hang Seng has seen a much more muted performance, as has the H share indices, but the shares that they trade in China have just, or the indices rather, in China, which the Chinese people, of course, trade, have just gone ballistic. So that's dangerous because it's certainly unsustainable beyond the short term, and it's looking quite climactic, as I've said before. Looking at stock markets beyond a reaction, I know a lot of people are really quite bearish on valuations. People have been very bearish because of the US subprime story. That's never worried me to the same degree as veteran subscribers will and regular listeners will know. We still have the global economy synchronized in a period of expansion, and we don't have too much overheating, although noticeably we have had overheating in the two largest economies, China and India. And that partially offsets the weakness, though, that we have seen in the US economy. So, net it all out, and I think that this is a respectable overall performance, but not all that inflationary. And that may surprise some listeners because, I've long maintained that we were in a cycle of gradually rising inflation. I said that it would not be linear, it would be in waves where inflation would pick up a little bit and then central banks would get concerned and then inflation would ease and they would take measures to bring some of that inflation down, but then it would pick up again and move to new highs. Talking about a very long-term move, lasting perhaps a couple of decades, possibly more. Now, at the time I first made those forecasts, and we're really going back 5 years, at least, a number of people have said, "No, we know we're going to get deflation, and everything indicates deflationary pressures." Well, the counter to that was look at all the credit creation, look at all the money printing that's taking place, and the central banks basically are printing their way out of that deflationary slump. And they were doing so because of the competitive pressures of globalization and the deflationary pressures, particularly in manufacturing, that introduced. But that's all old history. You know all of that. But I have said recently that with the US slowdown, with food prices not taking off, at least not right now. This is a risk. This is a weather-related risk at some stage. But at the moment, food prices have not really taken off. And with the oil price mostly ranging, we don't have those very strong inflationary pressures. We've had some wage and inflation, but wage inflation is not what's going to be at the heart of any inflationary problems anytime soon. And that's something I've long maintained because there's globalization again that helps to keep wage inflation down. I felt that it would always be led by commodities, and the industrial metals are certainly very, very strong, but oil and the foods are more important in terms of the overall mix of those inflationary pressures. And the global economy is not overheating, although whenever it's synchronized in a period of GDP expansion, that is a little bit inflationary. But what I'm advocating now is I think we're in an environment where we could quite possibly see some of those inflationary pressures that have so concerned the central banks. We could see them ease a little bit over the next quarter and perhaps beyond. Certainly that would not be the case if we had crop disasters leading to spikes in food prices, but that's not the case, to repeat my point right now. So I wouldn't be at all surprised to see, as I've said, some moderation of those inflationary pressures, and that would not necessarily lead to a raft of interest rate cuts. I think that would really be quite unlikely, but it would make it easier for the Fed to lower interest rates slightly if need be. But again, it's not an environment that is likely to derail the overall global uptrend for stock markets. They are very much in need of some mean reversion in terms of the 200-day moving averages. Well, not all of them, but most of them are in need of a little bit of mean reversion. But that can be achieved by a reaction from current levels, which I've already mentioned I thought would probably be ranging in nature. Now, what looks best going forward? Well, there's always a bit of rotation in terms of sectors. But I think that the re-rating that we have seen of the industrial mining shares has certainly got legs. This is going to run for a while. And the surprise really was that it was delayed so long. And I put that down to the fact that so many high-profile commentators were talking about the collapse of commodities and the commodity bubble and so on. And I think being a little bit deficient on the vision thing, in terms of the demand for these resources coming from China, India, and all the other developing economies, not to mention the developed economies. So I think that those industrial mining shares are going to do exceptionally well from current levels. They're probably getting a little bit of a consolidation here right now, and certainly would. If we see more of a reaction by global stock markets, as is quite likely, but that would be another buying opportunity. The values are great, the technical action is good overall. That pretty much says it. Asian markets, they're among my very favorites for the long term, but we've got the wallflower Japan. Which probably will remain a wallflower until we see irrefutable technical evidence of an improvement in the Japanese banks index. Now, it's firmed up a little bit recently, but if you look at a weekly chart, and I'm posting it later today, if you look at a weekly chart, the 200-day moving average is trending down. The index has been ranging down for over a year, I think, or certainly many months, and that's not that favorable a picture. Also, in a number of other stock market regions, Europe, if you look at European banks, if you look at North American banks, that they have been underperforming a bit recently, but not as much as in Japan. So going back to Japan, I think it's still a case of tomorrow's jam. I think we will get an additional upward leg, excuse me, by the Japanese stock market, and it will be well supported. What will it look like when it actually unfolds? Well, have a look at the weekly chart of the Malaysian stock market index. I'll be posting that later in the day. And looking at a weekly chart, and that had, I think, at least a couple of years of ranging activity, and then it finally broke out up out of that range and has been one of the best performers around subsequently. So big patterns, big consolidation patterns are usually resolved by very, very strong moves once you get the breakouts from those big ranging patterns. And that's what I expect for Japan, but I'm not holding my breath at this stage. It's been a process of seeing a little bit of improvement, a little bit of deterioration, which basically says more ranging is taking place. The developing Asian story is terrific, but China's getting a little bit scary in the short term as far as new money is concerned. I'm not going to sell my investments in China. First, they're not in the A shares, although the fund I hold, that Atlantis China Fortune Fund, has done exceptionally well. That's a long-term core holding, but I would be wary of putting new money in it myself. I'm not going to do that, and I do have capital that I can add to stock markets and intend to following the next correction of consequence. Meanwhile, I'm happy to take the improving interest rates that we see in the UK, and if I want to step up my positions a little bit, I use my leveraged account for that. But I'm digressing here from the big theme. Asian emerging markets, I said right from late last autumn and the beginning of this year that I thought we would see some underperformance from those. And indeed we have. If you look at the China shares that we can buy, the HSCEI, if you look at the Hang Seng index, if you look at India's performance overall, although the smaller markets, such as Malaysia and the Philippines and Indonesia have done exceedingly well, particularly Malaysia and Indonesia. But that performance has been mostly matched by Singapore, one of the developed economies overall, and South Korea has come to life, had a wonderful run breaking up out of a long secular bear market trend. I think Taiwan will do that before too very much longer. So I felt that the more conservative play was in some of the developed economies within Asia. But I do like the region overall, and on a long-term basis, it's really India and China. India, I regard as the queen of emerging markets, and China is the king of emerging markets by its size and the fact that it has the lead over India in terms of development. But I wouldn't be surprised if, well, if I live long enough to see it, that India might do even better than China over the very, very long term for reasons that I've detailed previously. And going back up for a moment to the resources theme, markets such as Australia, wonderful, Canada, wonderful. Those would be the two top picks among the developed resources markets. Brazil in South America, Argentina as well, Mexico. But some of these are really looking quite overextended. Certainly Australia is due for this reaction reversion to the mean. But in terms of a long-term play, I think it's outstanding. South Africa subject to governance, and hopefully that governance is improving. But let's not kid ourselves; it's not in the same category as, well, I don't think so, at any rate, as Australia and Canada. Russia, I have trouble with the not so much the authoritarian politics. We have that in China, and I don't like it from a social standpoint, but I'm talking economically and in terms of investment potential. I don't like the way the government in Russia has such a strong control, or has been gradually regaining control of all of these resources companies. That does worry me. I think it's much less so, much less the case in China. Now, but again, Russia has enviable industrial resources, and so overall, that makes it an extremely interesting investment story. Underperforming here at the moment, it's really at the forefront of this overall reaction. And if that comes down a bit further, well, it's coming back into a buying range in my view, but I'm not tempted to move at this stage, given the susceptibility of so many other markets to an additional correction. Moving on to the government bonds, I have maintained from the middle of 2003 that the global secular bull market in long-dated government bond prices had ended. In other words, that the yields had ended in June 2003, and that we would see a lengthy base-building process for those long-dated yields. And that was all part of a new secular bear market, defined as gradually rising yields for long-dated government bonds. The next big move in long-dated government bond yields, I do feel, will be on the upside. And therefore, I obviously don't like those as an investment play. I think the only time that we have investment opportunities, and I would really rather describe them as trading opportunities, will be when stock markets are really quite weak. Now, the bond prices had firmed up prior to this week, prior to today's rally, and that's the sort of action that I would expect if people become frightened by stock market action and feel that a correction is underway, let alone worse. If they feel that way, then they're going to retreat to bonds to a certain extent. But all I can see for bonds from the long side is these temporary technical rallies as people go to the so-called safe haven of government bonds. But basically, as I've said so many times, there's too much supply, there's too much inflation in the pipeline, and the yields are really too low. And I don't buy these arguments that there are going to be so many baby boomers, and that governments such as China and Japan will be buying these things in perpetuity to prevent yields from ever going up. That's the view from someone with a long position, or trying to justify the case for a long position in long-dated government bonds. And have a look at those long-term charts. Secular bear market on the cards. When we do get that next big upward move in yields, that's going to cause problems. I'm not going to try to guess when that's going to take place. I hope it's deferred for a while, not least because I've said that I felt that global stock markets would probably avoid, or had a good chance of avoiding, a bear market trend. That's global stock markets I'm talking about, that we're unlikely to see an actual bear market trend until 2009-10 at the earliest. It's a guess, of course, when you make a forecast that's out that far in the future. When that happens, excuse me, I'm sure that higher yields, higher long-dated bond yields will have contributed to the problem, and then we will see yields come down temporarily while that equity bear market persists. Okay, moving on to the industrial resources sector first. This is they are at the heart of the supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme that I've been talking about for the last 4 to 5 years. Now, the industrial metals are the best of that theme, and that includes uranium. The petroleum contracts are also in these secular bull markets, but they're just very unlikely to see the same sort of performance that we're seeing in the industrial metals. And there's more supply of the petroleum around, and the taps can be turned on a little bit more quickly than is the case with the industrial metals in terms of increasing production. Now, perhaps this special situation in terms of demand outstripping supply of the industrial metals quite comprehensively, perhaps that will even out at some stage. I mean, people have been forecasting it for years and then keep rolling their dates forward and revising their prices upwards. So I don't assume that it's going to happen anytime soon in here. I can actually see demand for the industrial metals picking up and continuing to grow at a rate that's even faster than the increase in supplies, which is certainly in the pipeline for industrial metals. But this is and a hugely important investment area, and I will continue to remain overweight in the industrial metal mining stocks. So, and I also like the various different energy plays, but the one I particularly like is uranium, as I've mentioned before. Now, albeit speculative, among the shares, as I've said so often. Now, in terms of precious metals, the story is good, but it's not as good as the industrial metal story, partly because the precious metals are mainly investment metals. Now, they benefit enormously from the inflation, which is leaking out of the pipeline, and that pent-up inflation that will go on in a secular trend that will certainly help them. They benefit from the fact that, as I've said so on so many occasions, no country, or no government, I should say, wants a hard currency because of the competitive pressures that that imposes on them. So the mere fact that we live in a fiat currency world and no government, without any exceptions, bar none, they want to have soft currencies. So really, we're in a game of competitive devaluation. It's not dramatic, done mostly by stealth, small moves, but none of these fiat currencies are a store of value. Gold is, and that has been reflected in the price over the over 4 out of the last 5 years, not over the last year, but it will be, because precious metals are completing this big medium-term correction. So I don't think that the sell-off that we saw yesterday, while it's disappointing if you're long, and I actually got stopped out of a quarter of my gold positions. I can pick them up again any time if I want, but I maintain that the big move here is certainly on the upside, and I think that we will see another leg on the upside, taking gold well above the $700 level. I expect to see that this year. So now, mining shares. What about the gold mine shares? Well, I prefer the metal, and that has always been the case. Why don't I say that about the industrial mining companies? Well, I prefer the metal as well, although it's You get a little bit of vertigo with some of these industrial metal prices, and they're not as easy to trade for any of us. Copper is the easiest one to trade because of the COMEX contract, but it's the outstanding value in terms of the low PERs and the earnings potential, strong balance sheets, and so on, in the industrial mining shares that made me such a big fan of that sector. And when we look at the gold shares, we're not dealing with the same level of quality in terms of value. I think they will do well. The pattern suggests that they will do well when gold is clearly seen to be maintaining a move above $700. But I do not feel that they will match, that gold shares will match the performance of the industrial metal miners. And gold shares historically have been a highly volatile sector and one that really needs to be traded rather than a buy and hold stance. I'm waiting patiently for this next upward move in gold, and I will probably use that as an opportunity to lighten some positions that I have in that sector in favor of other resources and most likely the industrial metal shares. Commodity shares, soft commodity shares, doing very well. And the outlook for the soft commodity prices themselves really, as I've said on so many occasions, depends on what actually takes place with weather. Demand is increasing for all of these commodities. That's certainly a bull story. Global stockpiles, in most instances, are lower than they were. That is certainly a bull point, but arguably both of those are mostly in the price right now. And the weather is therefore the key catalyst. This is always the case with soft commodities. The demand is predictable. It's usually going up at a modest rate. It's going up at a slightly stronger rate now because of ethanol, because of the increased wealth in the big emerging markets. So demand is increasing at a somewhat faster rate, and will continue to do so over the next couple of decades and probably more than we have seen over the last couple of decades. And that will cause some problems in terms of supply, leading to some occasional spikes in foods. Have I missed anything out? The US dollar. I think this is still a fundamentally weak currency overall, but looking, well, it's lost some downside momentum, but I don't see much beyond a small technical rally. The yen is another fundamentally weak currency, and I've said following the Ndaka experience, that's the word, of course, that the Japanese invented to describe living with a strong yen in the 1990s. You have a whole generation of government officials, monetary officials in Japan, who are determined not to see the yen experience a strong surge on the upside again. And just in the early stages still of pulling out of their long deflation, and with the economy not all that robust at this stage, Japan is going to ensure that its currency remains weak. And it's a lot easier for a government to weaken its currency, cut the interest rates and print more of it, than it is for a government to deter buyers who wish to park money in those currencies. Well, I think that's it for another week, folks. So I will just say to you, have an absolutely outstanding weekend. All the very best to all of you.